Chapter 9 When Diplomacy Fails. Rydell took a Cal-Air tilt rotor out of Burbank into Tuesday's early evening. The guy in San Francisco had paid for it from the other end, said call him Freddy. No seat-back fun on Cal-Air, and the passengers definitely downscale. Babies crying. Had a window seat. Down there, the spread of lights through the faint glaze of some previous passenger's hair oil. The valley. Turquoise voids of a few surviving pools lit subsurface. A dull ache in his arm. He closed his eyes. Saw his father at the kitchen sink of his mobile home in Florida, washing out a glass. At that precise moment, the death no doubt already growing in him, established fact, some line crossed. Talking about his brother, Rydell's uncle, 3 years younger and 5 years dead, who'd once sent Rydell a T-shirt from Africa. Army stamps on the bubble pack envelope. One of those old-timey bombers, B-52, and When Diplomacy Fails. Is that the Coast Highway, do you think? Opened his eyes to the lady leaning across to him to peer through the film of hair oil. Like Mrs. Armbruster in fifth grade, older than his father would be now. I don't know, Rydell said. Might be. It all just looks like streets to me. I mean, he added, I'm not from here. She smiled at him, settling back into the grip of the narrow seat. Completely like Mrs. Armbruster. Same weird combination of tweed, Oxford cloth, Santa Fe blanket coat. These old ladies with their bouncy, thick-soled shoes. None of us are. Reaching out to pat his khaki knee. Not these days. Kevin had said it was okay to keep the pants. Uh-huh. Rydell said, his hand feeling desperately for the recliner button, the little dimpled steel circle waiting to tilt him back into the semblance of sleep. He closed his eyes. I'm on my way to San Francisco to assist in my late husband's transfer to a smaller cryogenic unit, she said, one that offers individual storage modules. The trade magazines call them boutique operations, grotesque as that may seem. Rydell found the button and discovered that Cal Air's seats allowed a maximum recline of 10 centimeters. He's been in cryo, 9 years now, but I've never liked to think of his brain tumbling around in there like that, wrapped in foil. Don't they always make you think of baked potatoes? Rydell's eyes opened. He tried to think of something to say. Or like tennis shoes in a dryer. She said, I know they're frozen solid, but there's nothing about it that seems like any kind of rest, is there? Rydell concentrated on the seat back in front of him, a plastic blank, gray, not even a phone. These smaller places can't promise anything new in the way of an eventual awakening, of course, but it seems to me that there's an added degree of dignity. I think of it as dignity, in any case. Rydell glanced sideways, found his gaze caught in hers, hazel eyes, mazed there in the finest web of wrinkles. And I certainly won't be there if he's ever thawed or... Well, whatever they might eventually intend to do with them, I don't believe in it. We argued about it constantly. I thought of all those billions dead, the annual toll in all the poor places. David, I said, how can you contemplate this when the bulk of humanity lives without air conditioning? Rydell opened his mouth, closed it. Myself, I'm a card-carrying member of Cease Upon the Midnight. Rydell wasn't sure what card-carrying meant, but Cease Upon the Midnight was mutual self-help euthanasia and illegal in Tennessee, though they did it there anyway, and someone on the force had told him that they left milk and cookies out for the ambulance crews. Did it 8 or 9 at a time, mostly. C-U-T-M. Cut 'em, the paramedics called it. Offed themselves with cocktails of legally prescribed drugs. No muss, no fuss. Tidiest suicides around. "Excuse me, ma'am," Rydell said, "but I've got to try to catch a little sleep here."
"You go right ahead, young man. You do look rather tired."
Rydell closed his eyes, put his head back, and stayed that way until he felt the rotors tilting over into descent mode.
"Tommy Lee Jones," the black man said. His hair was shaped like an upside-down flower pot with a spiral path sculpted into the side of it, sort of like a Shriner's fez but without the tassel. He was about 5 feet tall, and his triple oversized shirt made him look nearly as wide. The shirt was lemon yellow and printed with life-size handguns, in full color, all different kinds. He wore a huge pair of navy blue shorts that came to way below his knees, Raiders socks, sneakers with little red lights embedded in the edges of the soles, and a pair of round mirrored glasses with lenses the size of $5 coins.
"You got the wrong guy," Rydell said.
"No, man, you look like him."
"Like who?"
"Tommy Lee Jones."
"Who?"
"Was an actor, man."
For a second, Rydell thought this guy had to be with Reverend Fallon, even had those shades like Sublette's contacts.
"You, Rydell, ran you on Separated at Birth."
"You, Freddy?" Separated at Birth was a police program you used in missing persons cases. You scanned a photo of the person you wanted, got back the names of half a dozen celebrities who looked vaguely like the subject, then went around asking people if they'd seen anybody lately who reminded them of A, B, C. The weird thing was, it worked better than just showing them a picture of the subject. The instructor at the academy in Knoxville had told Rydell's class that that was because it tapped into the part of the brain that kept track of celebrities. Rydell had imagined that as some kind of movie star lobe. Did people really have those? Maybe Sublette had a great big one. But when they'd run the program on Rydell in the academy, he'd come up a dead ringer for Howie Clacton, the Atlanta pitcher. He didn't remember any Tommy Lee Jones. But then he hadn't thought he looked all that much like Howie Clacton, either. This Freddy extended a very soft hand, and Rydell shook it.
"You got luggage?" Freddy asked.
"Just this," hefting his Samsonite.
"That's Mr. War, baby, right over there,"
Freddy said, nodding in the direction of an exit gate where a uniformed Chilanga was checking people's seat stubs before letting them out. Another black man loomed behind her, huge, broad as this Freddy, looking twice his height.
"Big guy."
"Uh-huh," Freddy said, "and best we not keep him waiting. Legs hurting him today, and he just insisted on walking in here from the lot to meet you."
Rydell took the man in as he approached the gate, handing his stub to the guard. He was enormous, over 6 feet, but the thing that struck Rydell most was a stillness about him. That and some kind of sorrow in his face. It was a look he'd seen on the face of a black minister his father had taken to watching toward the end there. You looked at that minister's face and you felt like he'd seen every sad-ass thing there was, so maybe you could even believe what he was saying. Or anyway, Rydell's father had, maybe, at least a little bit.
"Lucius Warbaby."
Taking the biggest hands Rydell had ever seen from the deep pockets of a long olive overcoat stitched from diamond-quilted silk, his voice pitched so far into the bass that it suggested subsonics, Rydell looked at the proffered hand and saw he wore one of those old-fashioned gold knuckle-duster rings, War Baby across it in diamond-chip sans-serif capitals. Rydell shook it, fingers curled over diamond and bullion.
"Pleased to meet you, Mr. Warbaby."
Warbaby wore a black Stetson, set dead level on his head, the brim turned up all the way around, and glasses with heavy black frames, clear lenses, window pane plain. The eyes behind those lenses were Chinese or something, cat-like, slanted, a weird goldy brown. He was leaning on one of those adjustable canes you get at the hospital. There was a carbon brace clamped around his left leg, big midnight blue nylon cushions padding it. Skinny black jeans, brand new and never washed, were tucked into spit-shine Texas dogger boots in 3 shades of black.
Juanito says you're a decent driver,
Warbaby said, as though it was about the saddest thing he'd ever heard. Rydell had never heard anybody call Hernandez that.
Says you don't know the area up here.
That's right.
Upside of that, Warbaby said, is nobody here knows you. Carry the man's bag, Freddy.
Freddy took Rydell's soft side with obvious reluctance, as though it wasn't something he'd ordinarily care to be seen with. The hand with the knuckle duster came down on Rydell's shoulder, like the ring weighed 20 pounds.
Juanito tell you anything with regard to what we're doing up here?
Said a hotel theft. Said Intensecure was bringing you in on a kind of contract basis theft.
Yes.
Warbaby looked like he had the moral gravity of the universe pressing down on him and was determined to bear the brunt.
Something missing, and all more complicated now.
How's that? Warbaby sighed.
Man who's missing it, he's dead now.
Something else in those eyes. Dead how? Rydell asked, as the weight at last was taken from his shoulder.
Homicide,
Warbaby said, low and doleful but very clear.
You're wondering about my name,
Warbaby said from the back seat of his black Ford Patriot.
I'm wondering where to put the key, Mr. Warbaby,
Rydell said, behind the wheel, surveying the option-laden dash. American cars were the only cars in the world that still bothered to physically display the instrumentation. Maybe that was why there weren't very many of them, like those Harleys with chain drives.
My grandmother,
Warbaby rumbled like a tectonic plate giving up and diving for China,
was Vietnamese. Granddaddy a Detroit boy. Army man. Brought her home from Saigon. But then he didn't stick around. My daddy, his son, he changed his name to Warbaby. See? A gesture. Sentiment.
Uh-huh. Rydell said, starting the big Ford and checking out the transmission.
Saigon was where rich people went on vacation. Four-wheel drive. Ceramic armor. Goodyear street sweepers you'd need a serious gun to puncture. There was a cardboard air freshener shaped like a pine tree hanging in front of the heater vent.
Now the Lucius part. Well, I couldn't tell you.
Mr. Warbaby, Rydell said, looking back over his shoulder.
Where do you want me to drive you to? A modem bleep from the dash. Freddy, in the plush bucket beside Rydell, whistled.
Motherfuck, he said, that's nasty.
Rydell swung back to watch as the fax emerged. A fat man, naked on sheets solid with blood. Pools of it, where the brilliance of the photographer's strobes lay frozen like faint mirages of the sun.
What's that under his chin? Rydell asked.
Cuban necktie, Freddy said.
No, man, Rydell's voice up an octave.
What is that?
Man's tongue, Freddy said, tearing the image from the slit and passing it back to Warbaby.
Rydell heard the fax rattle in his hand.
These people, Warbaby said. Terrible.